Explore the mystery at shrouduniversity.com.
I'm going to try to present what I call a global forensic analysis that is something pretty similar procedure to the one, to the steps procedure that we use in the regular forensic studies regarding to nowadays case. So I'm going to try to divide my presentation in three different parts. First of all, I will try to explain what I mean with global forensic analysis. Then I will talk a little about the hypothesis about imaging information, like a base to continue with my last point, that I think that is the essence of the presentation, the compatibility between the evidence of vitality and the absence of scenes of death on the imaging and some of the elements of the Stroud octree. When we talk about global forensic analysis, especially regarding to this case, we want to express that we have to include in our analysis the documents, the historical events that, that we have regarding this case, to try to get an evidence, because we are talking about something that happened in the past, so we need an evidence to take us to the moment and place where the events happened, something similar to the forensic cases in nowadays. We should consider specifically what are the features of this evidence that we are used to construct our hypotheses and conclusions, and we have to analyze in a globally. It means that we have to include and integrate all the pieces in a context of meaning. It's not enough to try to present some partial results if don't have a meaning in the general and global context. So the second point, to try to continue with this global forensic analysis, is some points about the imaging information. You know the features of the imaging and the spread of Turin, so I'm not going to stop here. But to consider our conclusions or hypotheses, we have different points, or principal points. We have been analyzing all the bibliography, and we think that the results are compatible with the chemical reaction, the Maillard reactions. For that features of the imaging and blood stains pattern, we have to start that with the assumption that the body was washed. Is something current with the Jewish ritual to purify the body before to be buried. We have also the references that probably were used, the Bible reference of myrrh and aloe to be used for that purpose. And we have some features in the image, of the blood stain that make compatible this assumption that the body was washed. Of course, the body this image is not compatible with the idea that the body was washed, because the Stroud of Turin, as you know, couldn't be used in the feet of the cross. It has to be in a different moment when the body was translated to the tomb. And after the crucifixion, probably the body was completely full of blood, dry blood, fresh blood, mixed with dust, with earth, with all the components of the different moments during the Passion to crucifixion has taken. You can see how the blood, even when it's recent, you have very dry blood with fresh blood and mix, and if you have some kind of dairy, it's going to be also mixed and dry in these moments, in different moments, as the time passes by. So if you see that the imaging is a clean body with a specific stains, a blood stain in different parts, in the arms, in the chest, in the face, in the head, so you see the difference between what is a completely bloody body and what is a specific blood stains in some part of the body. Our points also consider some parts of the process to get this imaging on the Stroud of Turin. I think that the cloth was also pure with the same products, myrrh and aloe, than the body. I will explain why. The blood stain reflects the handling or manipulation of the body during this process. And I will also show some figures. And the source of the amines for the Maillard reactions in different to what Rogers said we don't think that was the cadaveric gases. We think that was this kind of bloody surface after the wash of the body with the mirror and alloy. You see that the cloth probably was pure with the same product that they used to wash, because it's something that they is describing in some historical documents, and even nowadays when they proceed to try to purify or to bury some persons, they use a similar procedure. I, as a forensic doctor, I have done some autopsies from people coming from the eastern part, from Israel, from Arabia, from Egypt, and when we receive here in Spain, because there are Spanish tourists that have some accident there, they have the procedure that they used was very similar, using this kind of purification and curing some liquid, some element that they used to conserve or to purify the body in the same way that I represent here. We have also some historical references, like the Patriarch of Constantinople in 1201, Nicholas Meserites, that he described the Shroud of Turin like a cloth with perfume smell, a very strong perfume smell, and it means that it had to be in contact with some kind of this product to keep the smell for so long time. And if you took a look about on the shroud, you see that it's a central part that is clearer than the outside part, and could be related, I don't want to affirm that, but could be related to this kind of procedure that is described to be used to bury and purify the body before to be buried. I also do some very preliminary experiments because I think that this process also affects the characteristics of the blood stains and probably some of the interpretation. Because if you take an actual linen cloth and you put a blood drop on that, you can see in the two faces that it's very similar. But if you put some oil, a substance like olive oil, not the myrrh or aloe, you see differences between these. So you can see very easily the difference between the two sides. This is one of the sides, and you can see the stain on the other side, completely different size. Here is the view from the other side, and you see that the other side, blood stain, completely different. And if you realize also the color is different, and I think that could be another factor to keep the color, the red color, during the time, with the bilirubin and all the other theories, but could be also one of the factors. You see it's a very dark blood stain, although it's recent blood, but when you put on olive oil, any kind of oleous material, the color is different and keep more brighter, more red, and I think that could be another factor to consider in the future for future experiments. So you see that there is some kind of elements compatible with the use of the same products in the body and in the clothes. So another question is, the features of the blood stains are related to the manipulation, to the what could be a procedure to purify the body. So if you see this kind of blood stains, how it's located, and what is the distribution, the direction of that, this is compatible with the procedure that can be used to move the body after the wash into the cloth to be covered by it. So if you take the body from the hands, because the nailing was a little lower, you could produce a stain, a stream of blood that go down to for the backside of the arms. But if you take the body by the ankles, because the nail injury was just on the back part of the feet, the bleeding was stopped because the hands were stopping this kind of bleeding. Its procedure could also explain why there is some drops that are out of the figure, because probably during the movement some of the drops could drop out in some part, not on the, on the figure, but outside and beside of the figure. So you could see how with this procedure is compatible with the different kind of blood stain that we have on the body. This, the one that we have on the wrist, it could be produced by the usual mechanism that we in forensic medicine also, when you have to move the body, you take the body and move to one of the sides, and then you move to the other side to cover all the surface when you have to take or you have to analyze some of the different parts of the body. And with this kind of introduction or kind of explanation of elements to be used like an evidence to get our conclusions or arguments related to the compatibility between the evidence of vitality and the absence of signs of death, we can pass to the last part of the presentation. We have divided our conclusion in two parts, the absence of signs of death, basically analyzing the stiffness, the cadaveric or cadaveric stiffness or cadaveric rigidity, and the hypostasis. And in this part of the absence of signs of death, if we analyze the stiffness, we see that the distribution pattern is not compatible with what should be or what should be stiffness regarding to the cadaveric loss. Basically, if we consider that the events that take the person covered by the cloth to this situation was a process like a crucifixion with very important damage of the different body structure, especially the muscular part, that make that the stiffness follow a law that make it to appear delayed and weak. But if we consider the mass muscular destruction with the hydration, that is also something that happened in crucifixion, it should be that the stiffness it should follow the Brown-Séquard law that says that that stiffness should be fast and weak. And if you analyze the pattern, you see that it's a very general stiffness is with some kind of intensity, because you could see that there is a contraction, a muscular contraction around all the body, especially visible in the buttock, that makes that tell you that it's a general stiffness and that it is intense, because the other way it could be you know, affected by the position of the body. So if you have this data and you see there is some kind of stiffness in some of the joint, but you don't see in some of the other joints that are related with the crucifixion, and joint that suffer more the consequence of crucifixion, like the shoulders, it make you think that it is not compatible, the general evaluation of stiffness, with the pattern of the cadaveric stiffness loss. So it could be explained with a different hypothesis, that is the muscular contraction due to hypocalcemia. The hypocalcemia could happen in different circumstances, some of pathologies, some disease, but also happen, described, that it's happened with, there is a process of rhabdomyolysis, you know, muscular damage. It's happened in the traumatic shock, and some of the symptoms of this hypocalcemia include a situation like muscular contraction, general stiffness, tetany, even some kind of seizure, of kind of different problem depending on the intensity and the degree of the process of the hypocalcemia. So we have to you know, some arguments, some elements that make compatible this absence of sign of death regarding to stiffness. And when we consider hypostasis, cadaveric hypostasis, you know that when the person died, all the blood go to a lower part by the effect of gravity. And if you have some injury in this lower part, because the the body surface is going to be broken, that the blood is going to be outside. It's going to be out from the body. So if you see the back imaging of the shroud of Turin, you see that there is injuries. There are injuries on the surface, specifically the one regarding to the scourge of the body, and you don't see a general stain, blood stain that should to be formed because the blood was should be out through these injuries on the surface. Just the opposite. You see a very well defined injuries with a little a frame of blood. It means that it's not exactly following what should be a cadaveric hypostasis. So it's another element to consider when we talk about the absence of signs of death. But we have also some evidence of vitality, analyzing basically the same cadaveric phenomena. The first one, the blood stains, you see that the crucifixion was a procedure that implied a slow death and dehydration, and it means that the coagulation, the formation of the clot, should be fast. So after the death, it very quickly should clot all the blood, and after a few minutes, all the clot, if it's a dead body, should be liquid, very liquid, and with no possibility to coagulate again. We have to analyze in the context of the events, and we see that the bleeding have to be the bleeding that are shown on the cloth has to be after the wash in the tomb, and the purpose of this wash was to clean the body, especially of blood, and it means to remove of the cloth, specifically the most important cloths. And after that, you see also that there is signs of coagulation because there is no bleeding in the back, as I explained before, and the bleeding in the front part are also limited. It's focused on the main injuries, but it's limited. It doesn't imply that is a biggest blood stains, that but that is a bleeding that has happened just a few moments before than the clot covered the body. And some of the analysis that Adler did make or show some kind of retraction of the clot, what could be also related to a vital process. And the pattern of this blood stains after the wash in the tomb is compatible with the body manipulation, and I explained before. But we have another couple of elements to try to consider. One is the muscular contracture that I explained that is compatible. It doesn't fit very well the cadaveric loss, but is compatible with hypocalcemia due to a traumatic shock, and it's a vital sign. It's not a post-mortem sign. And as a part of this hypocalcemia stiffness, we found another element that is very interesting. It's defined like a Crusoe's sign. It was defined by Armand Crusoe, that was a French physician who lived in the 19th century, and is a carpopedal expanse. And what it means is that when there is hypocalcemia, it can be produced a carpopedal expanse, who implies the contraction of the muscle regarding to the zone of the hands and wrist. And depending on the degree of the hypocalcemia, you can get a different position. The basic position is the flexion of the hands and the fingers with the first finger down of the hand. So this would be the first step of the hypocalcemia in this carpopedal span. If the intensity of this hypocalcemia continue, you can get even a flexion of the wrist on the arm. So it would be another step. and signs of that carpopedal spam or Rousseau signs that is known like a midwife hands because the position we can see in the claws because they are, this position are compatible with these Rousseau signs and because the length of the fingers and hands implies that they could be flexionate in the part compatible with these Rousseau signs. So, if we consider all these elements together, we see that there is a compatibility between the absence of signs of death as some of the evidence of vitality from the forensic, the global forensic analysis. But I'm not questioning anything. I'm Catholic, I'm Christian Catholic. I'm not questioning any other theory. I'm not questioning any belief. Because the first conclusion that we could get with this result is if what's happened in the tomb of the Joseph Garden was a resurrection in terms of a non-natural process or was a resuscitation in terms of a natural process. And I think that we should distinguish between what is science and between what is belief. Because they are in two different levels. And I think that sometimes we try to use science to prove something that is belief and is something that probably is wrong and don't get any conclusion, because sometimes more important what is the perception about reality than even reality. But because when we have things like that, is nowadays events, what are the meaning of these events? It's something that could be explained rationally, but the perception that people get from something that could be explained scientifically is something that belongs to a different level. And these different levels cannot be reached by science probably. So we get this kind of situation of events, of facts, and people try to use to make conclusion to another, for another, a different level. So I think that science cannot prove beliefs and shouldn't be the goal of science to prove beliefs, but also that religion or beliefs cannot be based on what science cannot prove. Because with the time, with the scientific development, probably we could get an explanation to these facts that, like history proved some times ago, couldn't be explained by science. So I think that what we should do is continue in trying to get knowledge about reality, but at the same time to try to make people, society, understand that we are talking about two different levels. Because even considering my conclusions, if we are able to accept that a dead body gets life in the resurrection, we should accept at the same time. It's easier, I think, to accept that the signs of this death body on the shroud or in the scene could be transformed at the same time that the body gets life. So it's, you know, a discussion that we could continue always, because if we find signs of life in the scene where the resurrection could happen, we could say that if it's happened, they also change the element that was around the event of resurrection. So thank you very much. For me, it has been a privilege to be here, and I hope to continue doing some kind of research and collaborating with you to know more and to improve our knowledge about science and also about beliefs. Thank you very much.
Explore the mystery at shrouduniversity.com.